This is an MP3 audio clip from the weekly People First radio broadcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
In Robert Whittaker's book, Mad in America, Bad Science, Bad Medicine, and the Enduring Mistreatment of the Mentally Ill, the award-winning author bears moral witness to the suffering of hundreds of thousands of people abused, tortured, and damaged by the psychiatric establishment. The book is a history of the treatment of the severely mentally ill in the United States from colonial times until today. The book might surprise readers who assume that the modern psychopharmacology era has revolutionized the care of the severely mentally ill. The second edition of Mad in America has just been published. We're joined by author Robert Whittaker. Welcome to People First Radio, Robert.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're an award-winning journalist and an author of a variety of books. A 1998 Boston Globe article series you co-wrote on psychiatric research was a finalist for the 1999 Pulitzer Prize for Public Service. What brought you into writing with this focus on psychiatric treatment?
I came about through a back door. What happened was I had left daily journalism in the mid-1990s to co-found my own publishing company that covered the development of new drugs, a company called CenterWatch. And while I was at that company, I started finding out sort of instances of abuse of psychiatric patients in research settings. So I set out to do a series for the Boston Globe on that problem and really was just going to write about problems within research settings. But while I was doing that series, I came upon two long-term outcome studies that just befuddled me and I found quite surprising. One was a study by researchers at Harvard Medical School that found that schizophrenia outcomes had actually worsened in the past 20 years rather than improved, and that by the end of the 1980s, they were no better than they had been in 1900. So that belied this story of progress that we as a society are taught to believe in. And the second study that so confused me and confounded me was studies by the World Health Organization, which found that outcomes for schizophrenia patients were much, much better in poor countries of the world, specifically India, Colombia, and Nigeria, than in the U.S. and in other rich countries. And in fact, the World Health Organization investigators concluded, and I quote, that living in a developed country is a strong predictor that you will never fully recover from schizophrenia. So, you know, I wondered, well, why would that be so? Why would living in a rich country where you have access to good medical care become a strong predictor that you won't fully recover? And so I wrote Mad in America really to try to explore that conundrum. So that's how I got into it. I really got into it to try to understand a mystery and why we were getting outcomes that seemed to belie what we as a society believed in.
And Robert, how have you changed during the course of your research?
What a wonderful question. You know, I've done 200 interviews and never been asked that question before. I think the answer is this. Because I began, by the way, as a believer in the common wisdom. So, for example, I believed that scientists were discovering the biological causes of mental illness, and I believed that we were getting ever better medications for treating those disorders. And those are beliefs that aren't true. And I could tell you why that's so, but we really still don't know the biological causes of mental illnesses. And in fact, outcomes, and it's not just for schizophrenia, if anything, are getting worse today than they were 20, 30 years ago. So how have I changed? I've changed in this way. I have become sort of a skeptic of societal myths, so to speak, and not just in this corner of the world, but you know, every society has a story it likes to tell itself on many different things about its politics, about its generosity, about its history, its past. And I've just become much more skeptical about that history, I say the U.S. history, in all regards as a result of this reporting.
Your book, Mad in America, takes a close look at the history of treatments for mental illness, which in recent times focuses primarily on medications, including antipsychotic medications. Robert, how has treatment of what is considered to be mental illness changed over time, and have there been successes? I know you spoke a bit earlier about rich and poor countries. Were there some clear successes that you came across?
Well, I think, you know, speaking broadly and across time, you do see successes where the, quote, mentally ill are embraced by society and not isolated as the other. And let me give an example of what I mean by this. So, for example, in the early 1800s in the United States, there arose this type of care called moral therapy. And moral therapy was also being done in the England as well. And it was originated by Quakers, and the Quakers sort of asked society to rethink about how we're going to think about, quote, the mad. So before this time, the idea was that the mad, and this is, goes back to the late 1700s and all, was that the mad, by virtue of having lost their reason, had descended to the level of animals. That was sort of this common conception in medicine. But the Quakers said no. What the Quakers said is these people are brethren, and as brethren, we should treat them as we would like to be treated. And next thing you know, that conception of the quote, mentally ill, leads to a humanitarian form of care. So the Quakers built these nice homes, refuges out in the countryside, and the idea was that they would feed people well, give them a glass of porter in the afternoon, make exercise classes available, and they would believe in the capacity of people to recover and get better and sort of descend into madness and ascend back into normalcy. So there was this real humanity. Now let's jump forward into the World Health Organization studies, and let's say go to the countries that had, say, rural India, where they had very, very good outcomes. Well, what are they doing in rural India that seems to be helpful? Well, one, they apparently weren't pathologizing the illness so much. They weren't using antipsychotic medications on a continual basis. So they might use antipsychotic medications on a short-term basis to help curb the symptoms, but then they weren't keeping them on those medications. And when researchers came back to do their follow-up studies at 2 years, 5 years, and even later, you know what they found? They found that these people who had been diagnosed with schizophrenia by Western doctors, they were very integrated into the community. They were out working in the fields. They just weren't isolated from sort of the normal societal functions. And then finally, if we go one step further, a modern program in northern Finland today for treating first episode psychotic patients, that's the same emphasis. Their belief is, and this is in Western Lapland, that psychosis arises sort of out of a social breakdown between the person and community, and you need to repair that relationship. So I think if history teaches us anything, it's that if you really want to help someone who's in some sort of position of deep distress, deep psychiatric distress, you've got to repair those social bonds and make sort of build a community around the person.
Robert Whitaker, you've also more recently written a book called Anatomy of an Epidemic, Magic Bullets, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Astonishing Rise of Mental Illness in America. Relative to your newer book, what have you learned about psychiatric medications?
Right. So in many ways, this is a sequel to Mad in America. Mad in America looked at schizophrenia outcomes, and Anatomy of an Epidemic is really looking at the long-term course of outcomes for, well, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, depression, anxiety, and then also childhood disorders. And what you, well, first of all, just a starting point for the book is I just looked at the number of people on disability in the U.S. due to mental illness, and that has increased from, in 1987, there were roughly 1.25 million adults on disability due to mental illness. Today, there are more than 4 million, so we had this tripling of the number of people on disability due to mental illness in the past 20 years. And this is the very time that we have embraced this drug-based form of care. So you would think if the drugs are so wonderful, we should get declining disability rates, or at least static disability rates. We shouldn't get this extreme surge in disability rates. Anyway, that poses a question. Is it possible that the drugs themselves are increasing the long-term risk of disability? And what you find when you look at the long-term outcomes literature for various drugs, whether it be antipsychotics for schizophrenia, benzos for anxiety, antidepressants for depression, or the drugs for bipolar, is that yes, in fact, and this is real consistent across 50 years of outcomes literature, this paradigm of care increases the risk that a person will become chronically ill. Now, there are good responders to drugs. There's no question about that. But if you look about outcomes in the aggregate, it definitely increases the risk that a person will become chronically ill. And you also have a problem where you'll have people enter the system with a milder disorder, let's say a bout of depression, and then they'll be put on an antidepressant, and they may have, a bad reaction to the antidepressant, say a manic episode, and they will move from depression to bipolar. This is one of the reasons we're getting this big bipolar boom. And that, in essence, is a move from a lesser psychiatric problem to a more severe psychiatric problem. So big picture, what I've learned in Anatomy of an Epidemic and what I write about is really that this paradigm of care that we have here in the United States, Canada, and other countries, which puts medications at as the centerpiece of care, it's really a failed paradigm of care. You see rising disability rates. You see early death with this paradigm of care. Unfortunately, if you follow the long-term outcomes literature, you also see a lot of cognitive decline in people on medications long-term. So I think what I learned when I wrote this book and what I think what the book makes clear is that if we really want to help people get well and recover and go back to their old lives after suffering an episode of psychiatric distress, we really need to rethink this paradigm of care. And I do believe that medications can have a place in that rethought paradigm, but our current paradigm, where the drugs are the centerpiece of care, it is a failed paradigm of care.
You're listening to People First Radio. I'm Kevin. I'm here with Ashta today. We're speaking with author Robert Whitaker, who has written two major books about the treatment of mental illness, Mad in America, Bad Science, Bad Medicine, and the Enduring Mistreatment of the Mentally Ill, and Anatomy of an Epidemic, Magic Bullets, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Astonishing Rise of Mental Illness in America. Now, Robert, you were in the process of speaking about the astonishing increase in disability numbers associated with mental illness during the past 50 years. And the obvious question that comes out of that, could the widespread use of psychiatric medications be fueling this epidemic? I'm wondering if you could tell us just a little bit more about that, the connection there.
Yes, I mean, this actually, I think it is fueling the epidemic, and I think the evidence is quite clear. And one of the ways I looked at this is, as you try to understand this question, are the drugs fueling this epidemic? One of the first things you have to do is look at, say, what is the natural spectrum of outcomes for disorders prior to the use of the drugs. And what you find, and this is actually pretty surprising, is that, say, recovery from a psychotic episode was quite common in the pre-drug era. We have the sense that you have a psychotic episode, you're going to be psychotic for life. That's just not true. Same thing with depression. Depression, in fact, you'd have a depressive episode, and most people were expected to recover. And you look at what the doctors were telling people, and they'd say, well, with time, the depression is almost certain to lift. And depression now runs so much more chronic course that the psychiatric textbooks had to say, you can read about this in textbooks by the American Psychiatric Association, they say, we used to think that depression had a good outcome. Well, now we know it's a much more chronic disease. But what they're really talking about is the good outcome in the pre-drug era compared to the more chronic course today in the medicated era. Bipolar outcomes are dramatically worse than they used to be, say, 40 years ago. 40 years ago, people would have a manic episode or a depressive episode, and they would recover to what is known as euthymia, absence of symptoms. And once they did that, most would return to work. So long-term employment rates for people with manic depressive illness were about 85%. What are they today? About 35%. Dramatic decrease. And in fact, people are more symptomatic today than they used to be. They have a lot more depression, and they also cycle through episodes much more than they used to. So more symptomatic, less functionality, and you also see with bipolar illness some cognitive decline setting in after 5 years with these drug cocktails. So what do you see with the drugs there? You see, say, with bipolar illness, where drugs are actually worsening the long-term course of the disorder and increasing the risk of disability and therefore could be fueling this epidemic. That's one factor. But the other factor that is quite clear is that you put enough people on an SSRI, let's say you put 1,000 people on an SSRI for, say, even a mild bout of depression that in the old days just would have cleared up, there's a certain percentage of those people, say 10 to 25%, it looks like, that stay on the antidepressants for any length of time, that will have a manic episode or some sort of disturbance of episode that will get them put into the bipolar camp. And once they're in the bipolar camp, they are much more likely to end up on disability. So you can see how the disability numbers is in part iatrogenic, meaning drug-caused. And those are the two forces. The drugs increase the chronicity of these disorders, and that comes out quite clearly in the outcomes literature. And two, it can sometimes take people with a milder disorder, they're put on a drug, and they end up in a much more severe camp.
Nils Brazilius, a former science editor for the Boston Globe and the Washington Post, has said the following about your book, Anatomy of an Epidemic. I quote, "Every so often, a book comes along that exposes a vast deceit. Robert Whittaker has written that sort of book, drawing on a prodigious quantity of psychiatric literature, as well as heart-rending stories of individual patients." A little bit of a tongue twister, that Nils. He exposes a deeply disturbing fraud perpetuated by the drug industry and much of modern psychiatry at horrendous human and financial cost to patients, their families, and society as a whole. Robert, how has your work been received by psychiatry and the pharmaceutical industry?
Generally, they're not well. generally, there's, and you can say whether it's Mad in America or Anatomy of an Epidemic, the reaction is generally one of two things. One is just they ignore it and try to pretend that it's not out there. There's been a lot of that, actually. Two, though, there have been some attacks, and attacks basically are ad hominem attacks, meaning they attack not your evidence or not really what you've written, but sort of you personally in some way. So they'll say, for example, one review said, written by a psychiatrist, said, "If Fox Television ever wants to do a TV show of good journalists gone bad, they can start with Bob Whittaker." I mean, that was the opening line to the review. I mean, that's just ridiculous. So you'll get that sort of thing. And the other thing sometimes you'll see in reviews written by psychiatrists is they'll set up straw men. And by that I mean they'll say you said something in the book that you didn't say and then lambast you for that, something ridiculous. So they have been quite hostile reviews about me personally. So it's been pretty critical, I guess, from the pharmaceutical industry and psychiatry. And in fact, one funny little story, someone recently hacked into an intelligence firm, a firm that does intelligence gathering from pharmaceutical companies. And that intelligence firm had a file on me, and they said they're tracking my activities, and they'll continue to monitor what I say. So I don't know. Maybe they'll hear about this radio interview and add it to their collection of activities that they're monitoring.
Well, very interesting experiences as a writer in this particular field, I take it.
Well, it's big money. So if, in the United States, we spend more than $40 billion a year on psychiatric drugs. We spend more on antidepressants than the gross national product of Cameroon, so that gives you an example of how much money we're spending. So if you write a book that suggests that these medications, rather than enabling people, helping them function well and live well on the whole, but instead on the whole are increasing chronicity, increasing disability rates, you can be sure they're not happy with you. I mean, you're attacking an industry that's brings a lot of money to a lot of people.
We have just a few seconds left. Is there anything else you'd like to add to our conversation today?
Well, yeah, real quickly, and this was something referred to by Nils Brazilius. At the end of the book, one of my frustrations is, so I go through all these long-term outcome studies that basically document this chronicity. But these long-term outcome studies never appear in the press. They're just never publicized in the newspapers. And the reason is that psychiatry itself doesn't publicize them, and obviously the pharmaceutical industries don't. And I just wish that somehow we as a society could become informed about these long-term studies, about the scientific evidence, and then we could have a national discussion about it, whether it be in Canada or the U.S., because, you know, many, many lives are at stake. And finally, of course, we are now medicating children left and right. Those outcomes are terrible. And this really is a question of paramount importance for our society. Is this form of care working or not?
Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today, Bob. It was so much appreciated.
My pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
Robert Whitaker is an award-winning science and history author whose books, Mad in America, An Anatomy of an Epidemic, take a detailed and investigative look at treatments used for mental illness. You can find Robert Whitaker online at robertwhitaker.org.
People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society's CHLY 101.7 FM, CHLY.ca, community radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of these organizations.